If you're here regularly, you'll know that we're working our way through Matthew's Gospel. This is year 5 of our journey. We're into a section that begins with the transfiguration of Jesus in chapter 17. And we're going all the way through to chapter 21, which takes us to Palm Sunday, just before Easter in a few weeks' time. But today, we are looking at chapter 19, which is on page 986. And we're going to read it together, and then we're going to explore what it says together. So I hope you've come with a bit of energy and enthusiasm to engage with this passage. It's not just going to be me this morning, it's going to be all of us. So just giving you the heads up. You'll notice that the title at the beginning of chapter 19 in the Church Bibles is a one-word title, divorce. When Jesus had finished saying these things, he left Galilee and went into the region of Judea to the other side of the Jordan. Large crowds followed him, and he healed them there. Some Pharisees came to him to test him. They asked, "Is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for any and every reason?" "Haven't you read," he replied, "that at the beginning the Creator made them male and female and said, 'For this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and the two will become one flesh.' So they are no longer two, but one flesh. Therefore, what God has joined together, let no one separate." "Why then," they asked, "did Moses command that a man give his wife a certificate of divorce and send her away?" Jesus replied, "Moses permitted you to divorce your wives because your hearts were hard, but it was not this way from the beginning. I tell you that anyone who divorces his wife, except for sexual immorality, and marries another woman, commits adultery." The disciples said to him, "If this is the situation between a husband and wife, it is better not to marry." Jesus replied, "Not everyone can accept this word, but only those to whom it has been given. For there are eunuchs who were born that way, and there are eunuchs who have been made eunuchs by others, and there are those who choose to live like eunuchs for the sake of the kingdom of heaven. The one who can accept this should accept this." Then people brought little children to Jesus for him to place his hands on them and pray for them. But the disciples rebuked them. Jesus said, "Let the little children come to me, and do not hinder them, for the kingdom of heaven belongs to such as these." When he had placed his hands on them, he went on from there. I don't know if you've ever thought about what it would be like to live in an ideal world, or imagine what an ideal world might look like. We sometimes say that in an ideal world, we would do this or that, or in an ideal world, we'd have such and such. We've all been blessed, I think, with the gift of imagination. We can all imagine what it would be like to live in a world that's different to the one that we actually live in. And that ability to imagine starts when we're very young. We see it in children from an early age. They have amazing powers of imagination and can imagine all sorts of things. And then as we get older, we learn to live in the real world. But we can still imagine. We don't lose that ability to imagine what it would be like to live in a better world. And in an ideal world, perhaps we would come along to church on a Sunday morning knowing the passage that the speaker was going to be talking from and with an idea of what topic or theme we would be looking at. And you've probably seen at the end of the service each week, there's a PowerPoint slide that Jeff prepares with the title and the passage for the following Sunday to help us know what we're going to be looking at and what's coming up next. And Sarah puts the details in the face-to-face newsletter. So if we're really on the ball, we could read the passage before coming to church each week. And perhaps in an ideal world, that's something that we'd like to do. So if you've already read the passage for this morning before coming to church, or if you noticed the PowerPoint slide that was up last week, then you might be a little bit apprehensive about what I'm going to say this morning. The title is Divorce and Children, and the passage contains words like adultery and sexual immorality. It talks about eunuchs as well as divorce and marriage. And we might be wondering if this is really what we want to be hearing about and thinking about on a Sunday morning. After all, these are things that some of us find difficult to talk about, even at the best of times. But these things remind us that we don't live in an ideal world. And because this passage that we're looking at, Matthew 19, 1-15, contains words like divorce and marriage and adultery and sexual immorality, it would be tempting to use it as a springboard to say all sorts of things on those topics. But what I'm going to try and do this morning, what I want to do and what I plan to do, is to stick closely to what we have in this passage in front of us. So keep looking at it so that you can make sure that what I'm saying is what Jesus is teaching in this passage. Because what we want to do is to understand what Jesus is saying, what Jesus wants to teach his disciples in the situation that he finds himself in, the one that Matthew has recorded for us. And I'm sure that what Jesus says here is going to raise questions for us. It should do. And I hope, and it would be great, if after this morning we can go on talking about these things together and continue to work out what we understand from Jesus' teaching and what difference that makes to us. That would be my hope for this morning. This passage gives us an opportunity to think about and talk about things that we don't often talk about. So all of that is just by way of introduction. Let's start by looking at the passage. The chapter begins with a phrase that Matthew uses a total of 5 times in the course of this book. And it's there in verse 1 of chapter 19. When Jesus had finished saying these things, he left Galilee and went into the region of Judea to the other side of the Jordan. So Jesus finished saying these things is a signal. Matthew uses it as a signal that we've come to the end of a section where Jesus is teaching his disciples. He does it 5 times. And he's finished saying these things and he's on the move again. Jesus is once again doing the kinds of things that he's done all the way through. He's moving from place to place. He's being followed by crowds of people. He's teaching them and he's healing them. And that's what Matthew tells us in verse 2. Large crowds followed him and he healed them there. So far, so good. But then the Pharisees come along with a question for Jesus. And one of the things that I've noticed, and maybe you have as well, from these chapters, that there are a lot of people coming to Jesus asking him questions. We had one last week with Peter. Does anyone remember the question that Peter asked last week? How many times should I forgive my brother or sister when they sin against me? And then the week before that, it was the disciples asking Jesus about who was the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. Before that, it was the disciples again asking Jesus why they couldn't drive out an evil spirit from a boy who was sick and needed healing. And next week, there's a man who comes to Jesus asking Jesus, what good things should I do in order to inherit eternal life? So there are lots of questions in these chapters, and clearly Matthew thought it would be helpful for us to know what these questions are. But he also records what Jesus says in reply. And perhaps we've got questions that we'd like to ask Jesus. It's good to have questions, and it's good to remember that we can go to Jesus with our questions. Jesus said, "Ask and it will be given to you. Seek and you will find. Knock and the door will be opened to you." So there's an encouragement there. Jesus welcomes our questions. Jesus encourages us to be seekers and askers. And the question that the Pharisees ask is an interesting one. Well, I find it interesting. They've asked questions before. They've come to Jesus asking him to show them a sign from heaven on a couple of occasions. And Jesus has warned his disciples to be careful about listening to the Pharisees' teaching. But here they want to know about divorce, and in particular, whether it's lawful for a man to divorce his wife for any reason. And I wonder what we think of that question. Is that a good question? Is that the kind of question we'd want to know the answer to? Is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for any and every reason? Well, perhaps it depends a bit on our situation or our circumstances. Matthew tells us that the Pharisees had come to test Jesus. So perhaps it's not a genuine question. Perhaps they're trying to catch Jesus out in some way. We know that they don't like what Jesus is doing. They don't like what he's teaching. They feel intimidated and threatened by him because of what he's saying, because of the miracles that he's performing. Jesus doesn't fit their way of seeing things, their way of understanding God's plans and purposes. And again, perhaps we can sometimes feel like that, that we don't quite understand what God is doing. So they ask a question about the law and about divorce. Is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for any and every reason? Which presumably, for them, it's a tricky question. It's a subject where there's some disagreement, perhaps, some sensitivity, just as there is today. Divorce, I'm sure we'd agree, is a sensitive and perhaps painful subject for many people. In our day, I'm sure you know, the number of people getting married each year is going down. The number of people getting divorced each year is going up. That's just reality. And there's some of us here this morning who are divorced, or who are getting divorced, or perhaps thinking about divorce. All of us, I'm sure every single one of us, knows someone, a friend, colleague, member of our family, who's divorced. So divorce is something that affects us all. And a question about, you know, what are the lawful reasons for divorce is one that I'm sure many of us have wondered about, thought about. My parents got divorced when I was in my early teens. And people get divorced for different reasons, just as people get married for different reasons. When my parents got divorced, I felt ashamed about it. None of my friends at school had parents who were divorced. I didn't want any of them to know. I never talked about it with any of my friends. It was just something that happened. But times have changed. Today, divorce is much more common. It's become normal to have parents who are divorced. The majority of children in Britain today have parents who are divorced or not married. And that's a sad situation for sure. And divorce is still a delicate subject, one that often involves pain and shame and brokenness. That's okay. The question that the Pharisees ask is a relevant question for us, isn't it? Is it right for a man to divorce his wife for any reason? Because in our world today, it seems like people can get divorced and do get divorced for any and every reason. This is what we've come to. In our world today, this is the reality. And divorce may have become normal, but it's still traumatic. It still causes much heartache for many people. So how is Jesus going to answer this question? What's he going to say to the Pharisees? We've read it, so we know. But imagine that we didn't know. Imagine if we'd been there on that day, part of the crowd, hearing the question, and then waiting to hear what Jesus would say, waiting to see how Jesus is going to deal with this situation. How is he going to respond? Is it lawful for a person to get divorced for any or every reason? If we were to answer that question, what would we say? Probably say no. No, it's not right for people to get divorced for any reason. After all, marriage is a serious thing. It's not something to be entered into lightly. Not something that we would want to do without careful consideration. It's true that some people do get married on impulse, spur of the moment. We might know someone who's done that. I'm sure we've heard about that kind of situation. So it happens, but should someone get divorced for any reason? We'd probably say no. So let's walk through this passage. Let's see what Jesus says. And let's see how this unfolds, this situation. Jesus says, haven't you read that at the beginning, the Creator made them male and female and said, for this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and the two will become one flesh. Where has Jesus gone to reply to this question? Where's he gone? Yeah, he's gone back to the beginning. And then he says, so they are no longer two, but one flesh. What's Jesus underlining from that passage in Genesis? He's gone right back to the beginning, the very first chapters of the Bible. He's quoting it word for word. But then he adds something. He repeats part of it and he underlines something that's important. What does he repeat? What does he underline? Verse 4, is it? I'll take my glasses off. No, verse 6. What does he underline? Yeah. So it's not enough just to quote from Genesis. He then repeats, so they are no longer two, but one flesh. I'm not sure that I understand how that happens or what that means. Paul describes it as being a mystery later on in one of his letters. But the two become one flesh. And then Jesus says something that no one has ever heard before. We've heard it many, many times if we've been to weddings, because it's always said at weddings, but this is the first time these words have ever been spoken. Therefore, what God has joined together, let no one separate. So Jesus is revealing something. He's adding something to what it says in Genesis. He's adding an implication that isn't there in the passage in Genesis, but Jesus is speaking what he knows to be true, what God has joined together. In marriage, two people are joined together. It's something that God does. And if God has joined people together, let's not separate them. Which suggests that it is possible to separate. It's not like God joins people together and that's it. Jesus says, what God has joined together, let no one separate. What do we think of Jesus' answer? Pretty good. I think we'd agree. He's nailed it. End of discussion. He sorted it out. But has he? No, the Pharisees come back in verse 7. Why then, they asked, did Moses command that a man give his wife a certificate of divorce and send her away. Where have the Pharisees gone to in their next question? Deuteronomy. Yeah. Can't quite remember the chapters, but if you want to look it up, you can. If you want to read those chapters, do, but they're not an easy read. And Deuteronomy is, so you have Genesis, first book of the Bible. Deuteronomy, I think, is the fifth book of the Bible. They're all books of the law. The Pharisees have gone to the law. This is their happy place. They go to the law. They go to the rules. Jesus has talked about reality, an unseen reality maybe, God joining people together. That's real. That happens. That's what God does. That's what only God can do. The Pharisees have gone for the rules. I have this fear that I'm more of a Pharisee than I would like to be, that I go to the rules as well. I like rules. I like things to be clear. I like to know what's right and wrong. That's not where Jesus goes. And it's interesting, when the Pharisees come to Jesus to test him, that word for testing him is the same word, exactly the same word as we find in Matthew chapter 4, when Jesus is in the wilderness for 40 days and he's tempted or tested by Satan. And when that happens, what does Jesus do? When he's spent 40 days without food and Satan says, "Oh, turn these stones into bread," what does Jesus do? Where does Jesus go? What does he say? Yeah, goes to Scripture. It is written, just as he does here. The Pharisees come and test him, and Jesus says, "Haven't you read?" And of course they've read. These are the people who are experts. But it's a gentle way, isn't it? It's a gentle way of Jesus saying, you know, the answer's there. You're asking this question, but the answer is there. If you just kind of read it and think about it, the answer is there. But they go to the law. Why? Why did Moses say that a man should give his wife a certificate of divorce and send her away? And that sending her away is actually the word for divorce. So the translators here have used the word divorce, which for us, I don't know about for you, with my background and experience, divorce is quite a hard, maybe triggering word. But it's actually, the actual word is just sending away, a man sending away his wife. Like Jesus sent away the crowds after he'd fed them at the feeding of the 5,000. So it's just a sending away. Why did Moses command that a man give his wife a certificate of divorce and send her away? Because it says that in the law. It says that you're allowed to do it. Jesus replied, "Moses permitted you to divorce your wives because your hearts were hard." Jesus is, again, revealing something to them about the state of their hearts. And he's doing it out of kindness and compassion and love. They need to know that their hearts are hard. They need to understand that the law is all about hardness of heart. And we needed those laws, those rules, in order to live until Jesus came and fulfilled it all. Did everything that was necessary, opened a new way for us to know God. But it was not that way from the beginning. He's pointing out their mistake. If you focus on the law begins later on with Moses. But at the beginning, it wasn't like this. God's plan was different. God's intention was different. And then in verse 9, he says, "I tell you that anyone who divorces his wife except for sexual immorality and marries another woman commits adultery." And it's the same pattern that Jesus has used before. You've heard it said that you should not murder, but I tell you, if you get angry with your brother, then it's like committing murder. So Jesus is redefining things. He is the authority. He knows what he's talking about. The law was great, important for a time, but Jesus has come to fulfill the law and to make a new way. What do we think about what Jesus says here? I tell you that anyone who divorces his wife, except for sexual immorality, and marries another woman, commits adultery. Does that sound right? Does that sound... would we go with that? That this is the only reason? I kind of feel myself disagreeing with Jesus, which is an uncomfortable place to be. But context is important. Who's Jesus talking to? The Pharisees, exclusively to a person, were what? Men. So Jesus is giving them an instruction to men. That any man who divorces his wife, except for sexual immorality, and marries another woman, commits adultery. He's talking to them about how they might end up committing adultery. How else might they commit adultery? If you think back to the Sermon on the Mount, what's another way that we can commit, a man can commit adultery in his heart, according to Jesus? Through lust. If you look at a woman lustfully, you commit adultery with her in your heart. Adultery isn't exclusively a man problem, but it's mainly a man problem, I think. And other reasons that we might have for someone getting divorced, if we look at it from the other angle, if a woman's in an abusive marriage, should she remain married and continue to get abused? I don't think so. I think Jesus would agree with me. Hopefully I'm agreeing with Jesus. We can discuss this. This is all open for discussion. But the words of Jesus are the words of Jesus. What's really interesting is verse 10, where we get a switch. We move from the Pharisees to the disciples. The disciples really are the people that Jesus wants to teach, and for them to understand, for them to get what Jesus is talking about. And their reaction is really interesting. Jesus has said, I tell you that anyone who divorces his wife, except for sexual immorality, and marries another woman, commits adultery. The disciples said to him, if this is the situation between a husband and wife, it's better not to marry. How do you feel about that? I'm shocked that they would say that. They basically say, okay, if it's like that, if the only way a man can divorce his wife is if she commits sexual immorality, if she goes off with someone else, otherwise no divorce, their reaction is to say, better not to marry then. Really? Is that what they're saying? Is that their conclusion? I think it is. I think they're saying that in their culture, and we don't know all the details of their culture, but they're saying, okay, if I get married to someone, I can't get out of that relationship unless my wife commits adultery, then I'm stuck, maybe with a person that I don't get on with or don't like very much, or I don't know, could do something that I disapprove of. I don't know. So their conclusion is, okay, we just won't get married, which is kind of where we've ended up today, I think. There are a lot of people who say, you know, we're just not going to get married. We'll live together. We'll have a family or whatever, but we just won't get married. That's kind of where we've got to today. And what does Jesus say in reply to that? Jesus replied, not everyone can accept this word, but only those to whom it has been given. What word is Jesus referring to? Not everyone can accept this word, but only those to whom it has been given. Any suggestions? Exactly. Yeah. This thing of it's better not to marry. And Jesus isn't disagreeing with them. He's not saying, no, you've got it wrong. It's always good to marry. He's saying, no, actually, for some people who can accept this word, for some people, it's better not to marry. Not everyone can accept this word, only those to whom it has been given. And then he talks about eunuchs. For there are eunuchs who were born that way, and there are eunuchs who have been made that way, and there are those who choose to live like eunuchs for the sake of the kingdom of heaven. Wow, Jesus is suddenly introducing a whole thing here. Choosing to do something for the sake of the kingdom of heaven. I don't want to go into too much detail about eunuchs. There's a whole kind of, in different places in the Old Testament we read about eunuchs. I don't like to think too much about it, to be honest. But what I take from it is choosing to live like a eunuch for the sake of the kingdom of heaven basically means staying single, not having sexual relationships as you would normally in a marriage. And Jesus chose that way, didn't he? Jesus didn't get married. Jesus was a perfect person, fulfilled in every way, but never married. The one who can accept this should accept it. Something to think about there. Then people brought little children to Jesus. This is the bit that I thought I might spend the whole morning on to avoid the difficult part. People brought little children to Jesus for him to place his hands on them and pray for them, but the disciples rebuked them. Does that shock anyone? Hands up if that shocks you, that the disciples are rebuking. And why does it shock us? Because just the chapter before, Jesus has been talking about becoming like a little child in order to enter the kingdom of heaven. And what's happened with the disciples? They've forgotten, as they often do, as we often do. And Jesus isn't harsh with them. Jesus said, "Let the little children come to me. Do not hinder them, for the kingdom of heaven belongs to such as these." Becoming like little children, being children of the kingdom. That's what this whole series is about, from chapter 17 to chapter 21, what we're doing at the moment. Are we children of the kingdom? Is that how we see ourselves? Is that what we want? Is that something that we understand? Got a few more weeks to keep thinking about this, but the passage that we're looking at this morning ends when Jesus had placed his hands on them to bless them, to pray for them, which is what Jesus loves to do. He went on from there. So if you have questions, I'd encourage you to do two things. Three things, maybe. So ask yourself, why is this a question for me? Search your heart and think, if I've got a question that has to do with marriage or divorce or relationships in general or children or anything, why is that an issue for me? We live in a world that's very different from people around us. In many respects, think very differently to the way that we think and understand things because we have Jesus. That makes all the difference. So if we have questions, let's ask ourselves, well, why is that a question for me? Then let's ask Jesus, because that's what he says to do with our questions. Take them to him, whatever they are. In our prayer time, in our quiet time, in our reflective time, any time, let's ask Jesus our questions and listen to what he will say to us in response. That is something that he encourages. And then the third thing is, let's talk together. Let's talk about, even if they're things that we don't normally talk about, this going through this series as an opportunity to talk about these things. Let's talk about divorce and what we think about that. Let's talk about marriage and what we think about that. Let's share with one another without fear, without a sense of, ooh, there's a right answer, there's a wrong answer, we can't talk about this because we're all supposed to have the right answer. I don't think it's that simple. I think these are things that we need to discuss together. And in doing that, and even in getting it wrong like the disciples do here, they've forgotten what Jesus has told them just 5 minutes earlier. But in this process of exploring and talking together, it's not like there are 100 different possible answers. But we can walk in the light towards the truth that is Jesus together. And that's apprenticeship, that's discipleship, that's what we need to do. We shouldn't just assume that we all think the same thing, because clearly we don't. And with that, my time is up. I'm going to hand back over to the band.